The Spectator is searching for the UK's brightest entrepreneurs to enter the Spectator Economic Innovator of the Year Awards, in partnership with Charles Stanley Wealth Managers. If you have a business that disrupts an existing market, a smart new way of doing things, or something that has incredible social impact, then apply by the 9th of July at spectator.co.uk/innovator.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Isabel Hardman. And today we are going to be hearing an announcement from the Prime Minister about the 19th of July. James, over the weekend, ministers have been taking to the airwaves, sounding very pro the so-called Freedom Day. And it sounds like finally, 4 weeks later than planned, Boris Johnson is leaning towards a big bang reopening. Can you tell us the details?
Yeah, so I think the first thing to note is that technically this will not be the decision on whether to go ahead with the 19th of July. That will not come until the week beforehand. But what this will set out is, if they go ahead with the 19th of July, which seems kind of, you know, 90% plus certain at the moment, given everything that they're saying, this is how it would work. And essentially what you'd be left with is that the only legal requirement left would be the requirement to isolate if you test positive for COVID. So the 1 meter rule goes, the mask mandate goes, all of these things go. Now, this is inevitably going to lead to a rise in cases. And I think you see ministers trying to prepare the public for this kind of exit wave to expect. And I think it's also going to create a debate about what you should do, because it's worth noting, for example, that masks will no longer be required by law to be worn in shops or on public transport. But that wouldn't mean that it would be illegal for a shop to say, only enter this shop if you are wearing a mask. Or, for example, Transport for London to say, we think you should wear masks on, you know, you won't be able to get on an underground train unless you are wearing a mask. I think you see ministers, you know, trying to position themselves by saying, oh, I'm planning to take my mask off as soon as the legal requirement comes, which is slightly at odds with this government attempt to say that they want people to use their common sense about where and when you should wear them. You know, for example, I think given the role that masks play in protecting other people, if you were going to visit a relative in an old people's home, wearing a mask might be a sensible precaution in that instance. But I think what you are going to see tonight at this press conference from Boris Johnson is an attempt to him to basically talk about getting back to as close to normal as possible. Now, this will still leave some questions unanswered, specifically about schools and what they're going to do about bubbles. I think that in reality that the government isn't going to have an answer to that question until September and schools returning, but that will undoubtedly frustrate parents in the final few weeks of term. I also think you won't see a definitive answer to what will happen to people who get pinged by the NHS test and trace app. I think this idea that you people won't have to scan QR codes to say where they're going into is essentially an attempt to reduce the number of people being pinged by test and trace. But there's still no answer to that question of what happens. And as you've said several times, Katie, I think it is going to have a deadening economic impact if people think that with cases very high, going out runs a risk of essentially having to be at home for 10 days. But I think the government is leaning into quite a comprehensive reopening and trying to persuade the public that they shouldn't be alarmed by the rise in cases. But the vaccines means that this rise in cases is not, as it has in the past, going to inexorably lead to a rise in hospitalizations and a rise in deaths.
Isabel, the Prime Minister has decided not to go for vaccine passports in a formal sense, at least not yet. But yet, there is reason to believe the double jabbed could be treated differently than the single jabbed and the non-jabbed.
We're still waiting to find out whether there will be a change so that people who are double jabbed can do a test and then be released from the self-isolation that they're currently still having to undergo at the moment. There's also the suggestion from a lot of businesses and organisations that they may just end up asking to see vaccine certification in one way or the other anyway for their activities, partly as a way of encouraging confidence, as you said, Katie. People aren't going to go out if they think there's a risk that they may end up having to stay in for a period of time as a result of that. So there are a number of options that we still haven't got clarity on. And just because there aren't going to be, at the moment, formal vaccination passports domestically, doesn't mean that we're not going to see some form of certification being used informally.
And James, what are the risks for the government here? Because there's obviously building public confidence. We've had a government that's very effectively landed lines such as stay home, save lives. And you also have some scientific advisers beginning to sound alarm about Big Bang reopening, suggesting that, for example, it could make a variant factory for young people if lots of young people are, just getting their first jab. We're not really expecting the double jabbed in terms of 20-somethings and 30-somethings really till August and beyond.
Yeah, look, I think the obvious risk is if cases take off to an even greater extent than any of the government models have, and you end up with more people in hospital, you end up with, and that puts greater pressure on the NHS, and you risk that the government then has to retreat. It has to say, oh, actually, please do wear masks inside. The government have made such a big deal about this being irreversible. As you've seen in Israel, where they've had to reintroduce a mask mandate, using the word irreversible when it comes to COVID it is a kind of political hostage to fortune, I think. So that, I think, is a big danger for the government. I mean, the Philip Thomas analysis on the Spectator website is well worth reading. He remains very confident that the protection offered by the vaccines means that the NHS is not, the hospitals are not going to be overwhelmed, even though this Delta variant is more infectious and more transmissible than he had first calculated in his models. So I think the biggest danger for the government is having to go backwards. And I think the other danger for the government is the things that are still not sorted. I think you will see a lot of people saying, well, it's great that you've sorted out the rules about people going to the pub and vertical drinking and all this, but my child's year 8 class are all still at home because one kid has tested positive. And I know that there are not that many weeks left in the summer term, but I mean, considering the levels of disruption we've seen to education, there will be a lot of irritation about that. Those are the risks. I think one of the other things that are motivating the government in going ahead with July the 19th is they don't want this exit wave to coincide with the return of schools in September. And I think if you were to delay for another 4 weeks, you would be risking, or even another fortnight, you would be risking that factor. And that would risk starting another school year with massive levels of disruption. So I think the government has essentially decided that now is the least worst moment to ease up and to go for this, what is undoubtedly a fairly big bang reopening.
And Isabel, where do Labour sit on this? Because we've heard some in the Shadow Cabinet saying they want to see the evidence behind it.
Yeah, that seems to be the line that Labour are taking. And we'll hear more on that from Jonathan Ashworth later this afternoon when he responds to Sajid Javid's statement. But there was also an interesting response from Labour to Javid's article yesterday, where he said that we would need to learn to live with COVID in the same way as we have done with flu. A lot of people in Labour were responding with a quite obvious sort of willful misunderstanding of what he was saying. There was a lot of anger on social media from Labour figures saying, oh, the health secretary is saying that COVID's just like flu. He's being dismissive of this pandemic. And I think that's very irresponsible of them to do that. But I think we're going to see a lot more of this over the coming weeks, not just from Labour, but from certain people within the medical community, that the new health secretary doesn't take COVID as seriously, partly just as a function of the time at which Sajid Javid has come into the job, where he is, as people have predicted throughout this pandemic, working on bringing us back to normal and learning to live with COVID like flu, not saying, as they've suggested, that he thinks COVID is as serious or unserious as flu, but it is becoming an endemic illness that is largely not linked to mass hospitalizations and huge numbers of deaths. So I think we're going to see quite a potentially a culture war over this sort of thing. And this is something that ministers are becoming painfully aware of on masks as well. If you listen to Care Minister Helen Wakeley, for instance, this morning, and over the weekend you had Robert Jenrick, all being asked about when they're going to take their masks off and whether people should wear masks on public transport or whether they should wear it in a shop, whether, even though the government has said you don't need to wear a mask, whether people should keep doing so to protect the NHS, to save lives. I think a lot of people have got so used to state control in their lives over the past year and a bit that it is quite discombobulating that we're not being told, we're not going to be told what to do on such a detailed level anymore. And I think there is going to be a moral battle between people who think that wearing a mask signals your greater compassion, your greater commitment to our public services than other people, and others who think that actually it's quite important for our immune systems to get back to responding to respiratory illnesses in the way that our bodies have throughout human existence and evolution. So it's not a clear cut. It's not as clear cut as some people are suggesting, but I think we are going to see some very interesting wars between different groups of people here.
And James, Isabel's talking about perhaps a culture war mask that we're starting to see, and we're definitely seeing strong willed positions this morning as the news comes out on where masks won't be mandatory, which is most places. But what about the devolved administrations? Do you think there's a chance that we have a situation where Nicola Sturgeon chooses a path where masks are mandatory by the Scottish Government in certain places? You might see that in Wales, and there is actually starts to be a difference across the UK.
This is something that you've been pointing out for quite some time, Katie, and I think it is highly likely to happen. I would be surprised, for example, if Sadiq Khan, as Mayor of London, didn't say that he still wanted masks to be worn on London Underground. And I totally take Isabel's point about how masks are becoming a kind of cultural reference point. But I think it's also worth... There is an issue about where they are useful, right? I think there's actually a better argument for masks on the tube than on London buses, for example. In most London buses, you can open the window so you can have ventilation as an alternative solution. That's obviously much harder to do on the tube. And so there's a And so, you know, that I think would be a more sensible response. But I think you are right. I think that if you are taking the train from London to Edinburgh, I expect a few minutes after you leave Berwick station, you will be told, now please put on your mask because you are crossing into a different jurisdiction. I mean, I think it would be surprising if there were not different rules on masks in different parts of the UK. Andy Burnham, the mayor of Greater Manchester, has already been said very clear that he thinks people should still be wearing masks on public transport. So I think everyone will be kind of scurrying away to see whether he, as the mayor of Greater Manchester, has the power to insist on mask wearing on trams in Manchester or commuter rail services in Manchester. And so I think this is going to continue as an issue about where and when you don't have to wear masks. And I also think there will be, again, as with masks at the moment, neither mask wearing nor vaccine certification. In neither case has the government moved to make it illegal for people to request that. And so I think that you will still see places, some places attempting to either request that people wear a mask to come into a shop, or some large events or holiday companies and the like requesting evidence of double vaccination or a negative test before allowing people to either attend the concert or go on the cruise or the like.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Isabel. And thank you for listening.